This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
It was a long way to play with the same group of guys for more than 1 year, and I'm excited to do that. And the staff and the coaching staff, I have a lot of love and respect for all of them. So for us to come to a number that we agreed on, if we be able to come back to familiar territory, it was an easy sell.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That was Laurent Brossoit, Winnipeg Jets goaltender. He, of course, re-signed with the Jets about 2 weeks ago, in fact, because we were off last Saturday. We were off last Saturday when Laurent Brossoit signed a one-year, $1.225 million contract. We start this Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with that news. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Dave Minuk, Ezra, and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Sean Assor doing the great job behind the board. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning. Of course, we were off last week, so it's been a nice little reprieve and a nice little break from you fine gentlemen, but
it is good
to see you.
Has the Stanley Cup final started yet?
Actually, next year, I hear what they're going to do is they're just going to intersperse the Stanley Cup finals with the NHL draft. They're just going to do the draft on the off days so that the Cup final can all just be one big rolling party, because the Cup final apparently isn't going to end till next August at this rate.
I'm just glad it started, because that was way too long between games, right?
The whole thing is just silly.
I mean, it should have started Saturday.
Well, the reason they didn't want to start it on the weekend is because it's Memorial Day long weekend in
the
U.S.
Yeah, I get that.
And in their thinking, well, we're going to lose out on all those, you know, casual hockey fans in the States who are going to instead be at barbecues and at the lake and everything else.
Well, hockey fans that are going to watch the Stanley Cup final,
they're
going to watch it regardless if it's, like you said, Saturday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But the important thing is it's back. It's on now. We got a big game three coming up. But that was just too much. Like, there's only so much Celebrity Family Feud I can watch, you know?
I bet you there's actually a lot of Celebrity Family Feud that you can watch, would be my prediction. And we will, of course, talk about the Stanley Cup final during the course of the 3 hours on this Saturday morning. Dave Minuk, let's start talking about Laurent Brossoit, Winnipeg Jets goaltender. He was our goaltender last year. He re-signs with the Jets for that 1 year, $1.225 million contract. Obviously we weren't on last Saturday to share our thoughts, but your sort of impression of the contract, this sort of, you know, didn't really catch me by surprise. The only thing that I was surprised about is I thought it could have actually been a longer-term deal for Laurent Brossoit.
Yeah, no, I think so too, Drew. I thought that, you know, it's a nice bump up in salary for Laurent Brossoit, who made $650,000 last year, probably one of the best backups in the NHL last season. Obviously, he had a little bit of an injury problem, took him out, probably cost him a few games. But, you know, he really proved that he was able. He and Connor Hellebuck, they talked about it on the conference call we had with him Saturday night, which was posted online, so you can listen to that on our site. But he talked about how important it was having that familiarity with a guy who's the same age, has similar interests. He and Wade Flaherty talked about their relationship and how it's been a really good one, how they had connected 3 years earlier and then really kind of solidified things in that last year. So he's clearly a guy who's comfortable in Winnipeg, and you know, he could have probably, you know, garnered some interest. And obviously there was a concern whether you can afford to pay your backup. But I think from the Jets perspective, from an organizational perspective, having him solidifying that 1-2 with Connor Hellebuck is very important for the Jets moving forward, because you know that you need to have an able backup, especially because there seems to be, and as he mentioned this at the beginning of the playoffs, the Stanley Cup playoffs starting, the idea that a goalie should be playing less games. So you need that capable backup who can take some of those games off of his hands.
Right. And I think that, you know, Hellebuck's numbers were, games I should say, were right around where you expected them to be. But you could definitely make the argument, guys, that later in the season, maybe Brossoit should have been getting a few starts. And he did have that injury, right? So that might have had an impact there. But I think, you know, when you're looking at Hellebuck, you probably like him around 55 to 60 games, right? We know that. We've talked about that a lot on the show. And, you know, to Laurent Brossoit, I think it's just nice that he gets rewarded for his best ever NHL year, right? And he gives you a lot of, I would say, certainty, stability as a backup goalie. And you wonder where this leaves Eric Comrie, guys, because, you know, Eric Comrie's a pending RFA, 23 years old. You know, Dave, you would agree with this, that without Eric Comrie, the Moose probably aren't in a position to make that run in the second half of the season. I mean, he was the team MVP, and you wonder where this leaves Comrie, right? Because, you know, okay, he's 23 years old. He's still young. When you look at a goaltender like Jordan Binnington, I mean, he really got his first chance in the NHL at, what, 25 years old, 26 years old? I think it's 25, but 25. When you're talking about Comrie, you know that he wants to eventually be an NHL goaltender, right? It's just natural, you know, his development path, he eventually wants to be at the next level, right? So you wonder where that leaves Eric Comrie. So even though it's nice for Brassois, you know, for Comrie, I was thinking, man, that must be tough knowing the Jets are bringing back Brassois. Where does that leave me? I mean, it's tough to know if Comrie is fine with being the number one goaltender in the AHL, because you know that a guy like Mikhail Burden is kind of waiting in the wings, and you know that the Moose want to get him more starts.
Well, you know, you mentioned, of course, that, you know, where does this leave Comrie? And it's interesting. I mean, I think that everyone assumed that you bring back Brassois, that means it's almost a foregone conclusion that Comrie's on his way out. And I was probably of that mindset initially. But thinking more about it, it's only a one-year deal for Brassois. So maybe they're going to try and get Comrie re-signed again, give him another year at the AHL level, and then maybe there'll be more, depending on what happens after this year, and who knows at that point, of course. But maybe, you know, Comrie will show enough that they're going to be confident or more confident with him as a backup NHL goaltender after next season. I mean, I think if it had been a longer term deal, if it had been a 2-year deal for Brassois, then there would be no question that Comrie's on his way out and Burden would be the number one guy in the Moose. But because it's only a 1-year deal for Brassois, maybe there's a possibility that Comrie plays that 1 year, re-signs with the Jets/Moose, plays the 1 year again as the number one guy for the Moose, and then maybe they try and transition him to the NHL level.
Yeah, no, Drew, it's a really good point. And I didn't want to say that, you know, just because Brassois signed the 1 year deal that, you know, Comrie is going to be traded, because I think a lot of Jets fans, when they heard the news or saw the news that Brassois signed the 1 year deal, they said, okay, when is Eric Comrie going to be traded? But you're right. Comrie could absolutely remain a member of the Winnipeg Jets organization, remain the number one goaltender for the Moose, and then, you know, maybe he gets a little bit of time up with the Jets if there's an injury. Obviously, you hope that, you know, there aren't any injuries, but it's a good point. This doesn't mean it's the end for Comrie with the Winnipeg Jets, because as I mentioned, he's still 23 years old. But, you know, guys, it goes back to, you know, stability for me, right? Because entering last season, we didn't really know what to expect with Brassois, right? Like, he didn't have a great year with the Oilers, and not to say that we thought he was going to be a bad backup, but he proved to be one of the best backups in the entire league.
He certainly exceeded any for a guy who was basically unknown in Winnipeg, who had, you know, middling numbers with the Oilers, he certainly exceeded all expectations.
Now it's a position of strength, the backup role. I mean, Hellebuck was coming off the Vezina finalist season, so there was no concern with Hellebuck, but it was that backup role, and so you've gone from maybe a little bit of a position of weakness to a position of strength, where now you have Eric Comrie, Mikhail Burden, and Dave can talk more about Burden. He's a guy that, you know, a late draft pick that's kind of emerged as, you know, a top goalie prospect in the Jets system, and it's only a matter of time, I think, before he gets more starts at the AHL level, probably a backup role again this year to Comrie. But it's just a good signing for the Jets. And, you know, when you said, Drew, that you thought maybe he was going to sign for another year or two, or maybe he was going to get a little bit more money, I still think at $1.2 million, I mean, that's a bargain. I mean, I think you could argue that, you know, Brassois might have left money on the table, not saying that there was a higher offer, but for a guy that's going to give you 20 to 25 games, and you know that he's going to be, you know, a very dependable backup, I think it's a great deal for Chevy.
Yeah, and I think it's also a cautionary tale for folks who are writing off Eric Comrie, because I've seen a lot of commentary online about people who are saying, he's done, who cares if you lose him? And I think to myself, how many people were saying that about Jordan Binnington?
Sure.
Because, and good luck, for every Jordan Binnington, you have an Andrew Hammond, you have players you can point to who had one good season in the NHL and then started to fall back into the AHL. So I'm not saying that Jordan Binnington is going to be some sort of revelation. But the point is, Jordan Binnington was a guy who was, from an organizational perspective, was not seen. Ville Husso was the next guy up for the St. Louis Blues, but he wasn't, you know, playing. So they gave Binnington that role, and he got the opportunity, and he obviously took it, and he went with it, right? So the point is that with Eric Comrie, people are like, oh, he's done. Like, as he says, Eric Comrie is 23 years old, coming off his best pro season as a pro. And again, the team was nowhere without him, to be honest with you, because they were a shambles in the beginning of the half of the season, and he played very well for this team. Now, from a perspective of Mikhail Burden, you have a guy who played 50 pro games last year. Played 23 with the Moose, and he played 27 with Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
And from an organizational perspective, that's probably right where they wanted him. But, you know, do you want Mikael Berdan to be the guy? And the reason I say, do you want Mikael Berdan to be the guy? Because, like, as he said, you got to assume, you got to plan for the worst. You can't just assume the best. You have to plan for the worst. And so what Ez just said, talking about that idea of strength as a position of strength, you've got Hellebuck, you've got Brassois, and you've got Comrie if you need him to come up. Do you want Mikael Berdan in his second pro season to be the guy who gets called up if you lose Hellebuck or Brassois? Now, personally, I think Berdan's trajectory is like skyrocketing, but I take more. I have a little bit more of a risk averse perspective, and I think
you don't
want to
be one goalie injury from Mikael Berdan being your backup goaltender at the NHL
right.
level.
And so, and again, I think Mikael Berdan has the potential to be a fantastic goaltender in the NHL.
Certainly a fantastic puck handler.
There's no question about it.
Yeah.
He's probably amongst the best in the AHL right now. And
the Birdman.
Yeah, but the truth is. Again, we have this need for instant gratification in today's day and age. And I think with goaltenders, you got to take a long-term view of these guys.
If you're the Jets and you're looking at Eric Carmen, so you spent, Eric Carmen was a second-round draft pick back in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trading him, he's an RFA, so if you're looking to trade him, this offseason, what best can you recoup for him? This is a guy who's really had no pedigree at the NHL level. He's been good at the AHL level. But best-case scenario, fourth-round draft pick? Fifth-round draft pick?
I don't know about that. I mean,
you think it would be higher? Or you think it would be...
Oh, higher, absolutely.
You think somebody's going to give a third-round or a second-round draft pick for Eric Comrie?
Well, look at Comrie's numbers in the American Hockey League. I mean, his numbers are really good.
Yeah,
you talk about the amount of shots that he faced, the mm-hmm. games played, and all mm-hmm. of that. I mean, he's a guy... And I don't know. I mean, I haven't thought about what the Jets could get for Comrie. But, you just saying fourth or fifth round pick. I mean, even though the Jets have nailed some of those fourth or fifth round picks, right? Like, you can get a really good player with the fourth or fifth round pick. I just don't know if that's enough.
Well, that's my point. If you're the Jets organization, you spent a second round pick on him, albeit, 6 years ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
If you spent a second round pick on him and all that he's worth, all that he's available, he could get you back on the trade market is a mid-round draft pick. Why not try and re-sign him? Why not try and keep him in your organization? Why, not that I don't know that his value, is any lower right now than it is. I mean, it doesn't, what's the worst case scenario?
You got to think it's the value that it's highest right now, based on his season.
Well, but even based on the season, you don't hear anybody saying, Eric Comrie is the goaltender of the future.
No, but he was the team MVP.
I know he was great for the Moose. If you're the Jets organization, I don't think that you're getting enough. I think his
stock is highest right now. I agree with Dave. And again, I hope that the Jets are able to bring back Comrie and as a part of that, I hope that Comrie wants to stay here, right? Because he's a good guy. We've had him on the show. I mean, we were at the draft in New Jersey in 2013. I mean, we have nothing but good things to say about him, right? And when you're talking about, opportunity, that really is what it comes down to. But, we could get into the speculation game, Drew, but I would have to think, again, hypothetical, if the Jets are trading Comrie, you'd probably want a prospect back. I'm not talking about just a goalie prospect. I'm talking about, Comrie is a top prospect in the Jets organization.
Is he, though, still? I mean, I know he had good numbers with the Moose last year,
regardless of a guy's 19 or 23, forget the word prospect. The reality is, he's their number one goaltender in the AHL right now. So if Lauren Brassois gets injured, I realize he's not under contract, but getting back to Mikael Berdan, guys, he's 21 years old.
But you don't
sure,
hear
he has,
anybody.
He has all the potential.
That's right.
Let's say Brassois misses, half the season. Can Mikael Berdan give you 10 starts?
But you don't hear anybody talking about Eric Comrie like they did, let's say, Carter Hart in Philadelphia last year when he was playing at the AHL level and you knew it was only going to be sort of a matter of time.
Yeah, but Carter Hart's a top goalie prospect in the world.
Right.
I mean, he's the guy that was so good in the Western Hockey League and at the World Juniors.
But that's my point about Comrie is why would you look to trade him right now?
He's a really good goalie, Drew.
I know he's a really good, but I don't think anybody's going to give you enough for him that whatever they're going to give you for him more valuable than keeping him in your organization.
No, I'm on board with you. I am on board with the Jets keeping Comrie. Again, going back to what I said before, the only reason why I brought that up, guys, is because when I saw that one-year contract, I thought of Comrie because you wonder, it's kind of, remember Corey Schneider in Vancouver? It's very similar to Corey Schneider.
I was going
to
say Corey Schneider
with the Moose,
as well.
Right?
Yeah.
And you could tell that Schneider was just ready. Like and this is just me and Dave could disagree, but Dave watches the Moose more than me, but Comrie looks like a guy who's ready for the NHL. And for all those people that point out to his one start with the Jets. I mean, come on, guys. That's not indicative of the type of goalie that Comrie is. I mean, he had one bad game this year. But you watch the Moose, he was the team MVP, right? So that's all I'm saying. I just wanted to bring that back, wondering kind of where this leaves Comrie. I do still think there's a chance that Comrie stays with the Jets, but that just means it's going to be tougher for him to get those NHL starts.
Yeah, and again, like I said, I just think it's something that you have to think about from a perspective of what could happen to us this season. And if something happens, then we pull. I mean, if you think about it, again, you never want a guy to get injured.
Yeah.
But if, let's say, it's Brassois, okay? So you have Eric Comrie come in, he becomes your backup, and then you've got Mikael Berdan playing all those. Now, again, the Jets could move Comrie, bring in a veteran, and then allow the veteran to go up if they need be. But I'm just saying that from a organizational perspective, you've now got depth at that goalie position. And if it's one more year, I mean, again, then you're going to have to see what's going to happen the following year, obviously, with Eric Comrie and Lauren Brassois. But I don't know. I have a tendency to think, like you said, Drew, what are you really going to get for Eric Comrie? And is it worth, if you think about it, you've had how many years of development of this guy?
Mm,
you know, he's been playing
six years.
Yeah, well, and he's been playing for the Ice Caps since, he started with the Ice Caps.
He played five
games with them, and then with the Moose since 2015 and 16. So, I mean, you've got a guy you've spent a lot of time developing.
Mm-hmm.
You've put a lot of energy into him. And again, I always kind of go back to this. You got to be very careful with goaltenders and writing them off. Eric Comrie's played five NHL games. Mm-hmm. They haven't been stellar. It's not like he's been phenomenal in every one of those games.
Yeah.
But again, it's five games. If you can give Eric Comrie 5 to 10 games and he's terrible, well, then you can start to write Eric Comrie's obituary as an NHL goaltender, in my mind. But based on a sporadic one game here, three games there, one game here in a season, it's hard to really judge what he's capable of doing at the NHL level. And everybody wants to write him off and say, well, he's had this, like as he said, one game. That to me is a little bit difficult because you haven't really truly seen what he's capable of doing at the NHL level. And that's all I would say is that it's very easy to judge a guy. But to me, until you've seen what he's capable of doing, you don't really know what you've got.
When we come back, Jacob Trouba talk is continuing to ramp up. Will the Jets deal him before the NHL draft? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Same answer as always. I'll figure it out once things get going in the summer. What's best and move forward from there. We got to sit down and kind of have a meeting and figure out what to do moving forward. So I haven't really thought about it, or I tried to put it in the back of my mind as much as I could this year and just forget about it, and we'll deal with it when the time comes.
Well, the summer is upon us, and it sounds like the Jets and Jacob Trouba are rapidly heading towards a resolution as to his future here in Winnipeg. Welcome back to the Illegal Curves Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio.
This cornbread is delicious.
Yeah, that's first of all, give a shout out.
Producer Sean Asor brought some cornbread into the studio.
Yeah, cornbread for
homemade cornbread.
Homemade cornbread.
And there's homemade butter.
Yeah.
As well, which
he churned it in his own urn.
Yeah, I don't know how that churning process works. Johnny's going to get on the mic here, but
I just mixed store-bought butter with some other stuff, but you know,
yeah, it works.
It still works.
So yeah. This still complements
the cornbread very nicely.
It's what the butter is infused with. What'd you say? Honey and orange, a little orange zest.
I tasted a little citrus.
There you go.
It's just a touch. It's a nice little kick.
Just a touch.
You do have a fine palate there, Ezzy. So big shout out to Shawnee for bringing us some cornbread because I was worried that we weren't already fat enough here, but he's certainly taking care of that with the massive bowl of butter along with the cornbread, which is certainly laden with butter to begin with.
Well, you got
to
have the butter.
Yeah, you got to add butter onto your butter.
It's silly without it.
Exactly. It's just dry at that point in time. You don't want that. Anyways.
Easy now.
Yeah, sorry. Jacob Trouba obviously is a hot topic of conversation.
If I have to hear that Jacob Trouba clip one more time.
We've played it, I believe, 4 times.
It's too many. It's too much already.
I'm hoping we're almost done with it.
Yeah, please.
That's obviously the clip we played off the top coming back from break was him at the exit interviews talking about his future here in Winnipeg, where he basically said much of nothing, but you know,
that's Jacob Trouba though. Like, again, people get so wrapped up in like his tone and everything, and it's like, guys, that is Jacob Trouba.
But
like, he hasn't changed since he was drafted.
But we talked about that back in April, right?
Exactly.
Like, I mean, what is he going to say? Like, he's not going to say, you know, oh, I'm definitely coming back, even though that's what Jets fans want to hear.
Yeah, but I mean, here's the tweet from Darren Dreger earlier this week. That's why we're talking about Trouba again. Darren Dreger tweeted this. This is back on May 30th. So what was that? That was Thursday, I believe. Mm-hmm. My colleague Frank Frank Saravelli has Jacob Trouba number two on TSN's trade bait board. There is significant interest in Trouba and ongoing discussions. Several teams are conducting pro scouting meetings this week, so action is expected to heat up.
Well, and Frank was actually on the afternoon ride yesterday, and he told Huss and Rick that Trouba should have been number one, not Phil Kessel.
I mean, when
you're talking about, you know, Kessel and Trouba, isn't that a nice one-for-one trade? Obviously, guys, I'm joking. But
and we're both looking at you like off the air.
when you're talking about Trouba, I mean, it's been talked about here for so long, going back to 2016, right?
Yeah.
There was an opportunity for Trouba to sign the long-term contract with the Jets. We know that the Jets were interested, and then there was the trade request and all of that. So right now, I mean, we talked about it last segment. We weren't on the air last weekend, but when you're talking about, you know, the draft guy is only 3 weeks away, actually less than 3 weeks away, you know, you're talking about there's a window here to trade Trouba, and you know, you're talking about Comrie coming off of a great season with the Moose. I mean, Trouba's coming off his career year.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about Trouba, I think his trade value has never been higher, guys. And you look at the Stanley Cup playoffs, and you know, you look at the value of puck rushing defensemen, and Trouba's big and he's physical. I mean, to me, he would look great in a Boston Bruins uniform. He would look great in a lot of uniforms. I think the Jets are going to get a really good return. What that return is going to be, I have no idea.
I asked you this question back in April about the percentage chance that Trouba comes back to Winnipeg. You know, is it now almost, you know, 99%, 95% that he is going to be traded between now and, let's say, the NHL draft? Can you foresee a situation, a realistic situation at this point in time where he returns to Winnipeg for this coming season?
I mean, I can't. I mean, it just looks inevitable.
Dave, same question to you.
At this point.
I mean, look, have these guys been wrong? Did Darren Dreger really say anything terribly insightful? I mean, let's be realistic. He talked about that there's tremendous interest in a top pairing defenseman. Okay, well, that's not shocking. And he said that there's multiple teams that are interested. Again, not shocking. And that there's conversations ongoing. Well, that's, again, nothing shocking. So nothing's really changed. I mean, could I see Jacob Trouba back? Well, yeah. I mean, I guess if you're the Jets and there's multiple offers, but they all stink, why would you make a trade? You know, again, I know that you don't want to have to be in a situation where throughout next season, Jacob Trouba is constantly being asked about turning UFA next season.
Right.
And the constant contract conversations that you're going to have and the quote distractions.
Well, that's the big thing, Dave, right? It's that he's 1 year closer to right. UFA status.
Right.
So do you want him to be a lame duck next year? It's just, I think Chevy and the Jets are in a real, real difficult situation, right? Because I don't think the situation is ideal, but I also don't think you want to go to arbitration again and have a player who is 1 year away from being able to just go to any other team, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why I think there's more urgency right now to trade him.
But, and you know, if he does go to arbitration, Jacob Trouba's arbitration award is going to be pretty massive. If they can't come to an agreement on a long-term deal,
that'd be like $7 million, $7.5 million.
Probably. I mean, yeah. He's coming off. You know, he made $5.5 million last year after going to arbitration,
mm-hmm.
and his numbers were only better and significantly better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so this is a guy who's a 50-point defenseman. Whatever, you know, flaws he might have had, and you know, the obviously the boneheaded play in Game 5 against the Blues where he tried to rag the puck at the end of the game, and it ended up with the Blues scoring the game-winning goal with seconds to play. I mean, you still look at the raw numbers and everything else. Jacob Trouba is going to make an absolute boatload of money if he goes to arbitration.
And I think, you know, sometimes here in Winnipeg, we forget how good of a defenseman he is. Like, Trouba is a bona fide top-pairing defenseman
mm-hmm.
on any team,
mm-hmm.
right? And I wouldn't say he's a top 10 defenseman in the league, but you could argue he's probably top 20. Top 25. I mean, he's a guy that I think many teams in the NHL covet. They look at him, and that's why every time around this time of year, right? Did you watch Game 2 of the Bruins Blues series? I mean, that's physical hockey, and a guy like Trouba, he can handle that physical hockey. So this is a guy that can put up 50, 55 points, and he's a guy that can handle that physical hockey. He can dish it out. So I think there would be a lot of teams that would be interested, and we have no idea. You know, you hear Detroit, you hear Florida. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been teams that, you know, because Trouba's from Michigan, you know, and I don't know about that, guys, because when you look at Detroit, I mean, they've got some top D prospects,
mm-hmm.
right? Dennis Cholowski is one of the guys.
Detroit Philip doesn't Pronick. Make a ton of sense
it
to
doesn't,
me.
It doesn't make sense to me because I don't think that they have the assets mm-hmm. to give the Jets yeah. back.
People are saying,
who are they sending?
Yeah, Dylan Larkin. Okay, that's, you know, I've heard people say Dylan Larkin. the Detroit Red Wings are not trading Dylan Larkin.
I don't think that the Red Wings would trade Dylan Larkin for anybody aside from maybe Connor McDavid.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Larkin is a really good hockey player. He's untouchable.
Yeah, he's the cornerstone of the Red Wings rebuild. You're not trading Dylan Larkin to acquire Jacob Trouba. Anybody who thinks that is just not realistically looking at the situation. There's going to be interest. You're absolutely right, Ezzy. There's going to be a lot of interest in Trouba, and it seems like between now and the trade and the NHL draft, something is likely to happen. You know, don't expect it this week. I mean, the NHL basically tells the teams, don't make massive deals during the Stanley Cup final. You can do small moves during the off days, and there's certainly plenty of off days in between all these games in the Cup final. But nothing will happen really significantly until the Cup final ends, and then you got that 2-week window sort of between the draft and the end of the Cup final where it'll be a little bit of chaos.
What I think is going to be really fascinating, if Trouba is traded, do the Jets get a top pairing defenseman back, or do they try to recoup that first round pick? And maybe get a first round pick and a prospect or something like that.
Or like you mentioned before, go for the left side. Get someone else on the left side.
We talked about this a few weeks ago, guys. When you're talking about that right side, there's a huge void if Trouba's not there. But you still do have Buff. Sammy Niku, we know, is ready to take the next step. And you've got Tucker Pullman. So, you know, you look at that right side and you could probably start the season with those three guys on your right side. So maybe you try to bring in a left shot. It's really hard to know if the Jets are going to trade Trouba one for one for a right shot defenseman.
That's why
find me a trade that's happened aside from PK Subban
for
Shea Weber, Drew.
Yeah.
Find me another trade where you've had, you know, two defensemen of that caliber, right? Like whatever you want to use, right? Top 20, top 25 defensemen like Subban and Weber and like Trouba. He's an excellent top pairing guy. I mean, it's really tough to make those types of trades.
The name that jumps out at me, and this is just me absolutely speculating, but we talk about the Florida Panthers potentially being, we know Trouba has that condo in South Florida and everything else. I look at a guy.
I'm pretty sure half the NHL has a condo in South Florida.
Probably. I look at a guy from the Florida Panthers, left side defenseman, coming off a bit of a down year, Michael Matheson.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. He's got contract certainty.
Terms. Doesn't he have like
huge term? He's got 7 years left on his deal.
Okay.
It's $4.8 million. I mean, I look at a guy like
that. They really like him there, though.
I know they really like him, but I look at him as a guy, you know, he's the left side. He would slot perfectly behind Josh Morrissey on the left side as your second pairing, sort of more of a shutdown guy than an offensive guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't have a great 2018-2019 season.
No, he's a really good defenseman, and
He
could skate. He was really good for Canada at the World Hockey Championship.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that was 2 years ago.
That's right.
Because I don't think he was on this year's team.
I don't think he was. I mean,
but Matheson's a really good defenseman. But it goes back to what we were saying. Is it going to be a one for one? Are you going to have to throw in another contract? Or is it going to be because you're going to pursue? And I'm not saying that Chevy is pursuing a first round pick. But you wonder, guys, you know, with all of the names up in the air, if the Jets do trade someone to get a first round pick, regardless if it's, you know, a 15th overall or a 25th overall. I mean, there's a lot of balls up in the air. And when you're talking about trading a top guy like Trouba, I think there's a lot of different possibilities. It's not necessarily going to be a one-for-one trade where a right-shot defenseman comes back the other way.
In fact, I don't think it'll be a right-shot defenseman, but we're about 3 weeks away from the NHL draft, and when the Cup final comes to a conclusion, the silly season will really get underway. When we come back, Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun is going to join us. We'll have some more Jets talk. We'll talk about Ted emceeing the banquet of the 1979 WHA Avco Cup champion Winnipeg Jets. That banquet is tonight, I believe. So lots more to talk about. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. Minor Winnipeg Jets transaction to bring to your attention. The Jets have added some forward depth by signing Russian forward Andre Chibisov to a one-year, two-way entry-level deal. It'll pay him $925,000 at the NHL level. Chibisov has spent his entire career in the KHL. 26 years old. He brings good height and good size to the Winnipeg Jets organization. He had 20 points in 50 games last year at the KHL level. So, you know, just another player, another little depth to add to the Winnipeg Jets organization in Andre Chibisov.
That's from Kenny Weeb of the Winnipeg Sun. And, I mean, look, like, you always need that sort of scoring talent and a little bit of depth.
Mm-hmm.
So if this kid can bring it, then why not?
If you can get guys and who you think can contribute to your team and it only costs you money, that's usually a pretty good trade-off to make. So $925,000 at the NHL level for Andrei Chibisov, and obviously we'll keep an eye on him as he's Ken Weeb reports that he's expected to attend Jets development camp next month. So we can see
that takes place right after the draft.
Right after the draft, we can see what he brings to the table.
Now let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Sun, we're pleased to welcome to the program Ted Wyman. And Ted, we expect you to provide us with a detailed breakdown of Andrei Chibisov's game.
Okay, well, I'm just reading Ken Weeb's tweets right now, so I'll tell you what he said. No, you already did, so I guess you're good.
There we go. Excellent analysis. That's why we have you on the
Ted,
program.
Ted, did you guys time that out with the Winnipeg Sun? Like, did you tell Weber not to tweet that out until like 9:35?
Of course. You guys know we're that coordinated.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, Teddy, appreciate you joining us on this Saturday morning. Hope the summer's been going well for you so far. You know, we spent most of the show sort of talking about the Jets and some of the transactions and the rumors around the team. I want to start with Laurent Brossoit. Last Saturday, he signed that one-year contract, and a lot of people thought that spelt the end of Eric Comrie's time here in Winnipeg. We talked about that idea off the top of the broadcast. What do you think about the signing of Brossoit? And what does that mean for Eric Comrie?
That's a good question. It might mean what you guys are speculating there. Obviously, the truth is, Brossoit had an excellent season last year, and he's still pretty young, and he still was an RFA this year, and a guy that they could get under contract to get another good year out of and see how things go for him. Because, honestly, he was outstanding, at least in the first, I thought, three quarters of the season. He was... He did a terrific job, and he got a lot of wins for the Jets, and he played really high-level hockey. His save percentage and his goals against average were very good, and really I thought that was something that the Jets lacked the year before. Connor Hellebuyck had that amazing year where he was second in the Vezina voting, but he honestly just didn't, when he wasn't in there, the Jets weren't the same team, and I thought Brossoit did a good job of that, and he's been rewarded for that. It kind of would be tough if that means that the work that they've done in developing Eric Comrie isn't going to pay off in the long run. You know, they didn't trade Eric Comrie when they had a chance at the trade deadline when they're looking for assets. You'd think that that would mean that they want to keep him around and keep developing him and keep hoping that he's a guy that's here in the future. But, you know, there's going to be so much movement this offseason, as we expect anyways, that you never know if he can be a bargaining chip that helps make things work for them.
Teddy, I'm sure that you saw the TSN trade bait board and you saw that Jacob Trouba is number two, only Phil Kessel is in front of him, and a lot of Jets fans are a little bit nervous these days, wondering what the Jets might get back in return. Do you think that there's still any chance that Trouba is back next year, or do you think it's just a foregone conclusion that he's going to be traded at some point around the draft?
There's obviously a chance, Eddie. I mean, you can't ever say that anything's for sure. None of us are inside Kevin Cheveldayoff's mind, and circumstances will dictate that as well as to what the market looks like and what people are offering and who's out there that they can get in return. And, you know, so there's always a chance that it could go that way. But if you're going to be a betting person, I think you're going to bet that he's going to be dealt. And then they're going to rebuild the team a little bit to restructure the team a little bit around what they get back in that trade. And it could be more than just true, but we know that they've got situations to look at here with the salary cap. It's not a pretty situation. It's not quite as bad as the situation in Toronto, but if you're going to sign Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor and Josh Morrissey's coming up again soon, something's going to have to change in terms of how they structure their salary cap to make all that work. And so I think it makes a lot of sense. I don't think they want to. Jacob Trouba was their number one defenseman this year, and he developed into a high-scoring defenseman who played in all situations and did a lot for them. That's a player you want to have around, especially when you feel like you're in a window for the Stanley Cup, but can you afford to keep him around and potentially lose him as an outright free agent? I don't think so. There's too much on the line there. So, yeah, I expect him to be traded, but again, there are other factors in play that could change things.
You know, Ted, Kevin Cheveldayoff has a laundry list of UFA and RFAs to get signed this offseason. Started yesterday, got a couple more with CJ Cease and Logan Shaw. What did you think of those signings? And are you expecting him to kind of still nibble at the edges with these kind of the lower end ones, or do you expect him now to kind of switch his focus and try and get some of the bigger names done?
The guy who's more knowledgeable about the Manitoba Moose than anybody is asking me questions about Moose players right now.
I'm just more about the peripheral of the signings.
Well, I mean, those guys obviously played very well and have shown some nice opportunities. Now, when you're in a salary cap situation like the Jets are getting into, the key is finding players that can come in and fill roles at lower prices. And quite often, you're going to bring those players up from the farm. So, yeah, you got to have that kind of depth coming up, and if you're going to build a fourth line when you've got, because you can't pay a lot of money for your fourth line at this point. It's just not going to work. I heard people talking about how the Leafs are going to somehow manage what they've got going on, and, you know, that's where their situation is just, it's going to be a matter of finding what you can find to fill those roles on the lower end of the team and make sure that they don't submarine what you're trying to do by being not good enough. So obviously that depth player part that's coming out of the Moose organization and maybe there'd be some guys that they can get late in the off season through free agency as they've done in the past. I expect to see that happen again.
Ted Wyman is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Winnipeg Jets. We're going to talk about the Winnipeg Jets 1.0. That's a big night coming up tonight for you, Teddy. You're going to be emceeing the reunion dinner of the 1978-79 Jets team that won the Avco Cup. They were, of course, the final winners of the Avco Cup as the league merged with the NHL the day after the cup was awarded. You know, how special is this opportunity for you? I mean, they're before my time, admittedly, but you know that the history of Winnipeg, everyone talks about just how talented those WHA teams were, but this Avco Cup team wasn't the same one that won those championships earlier in the 70s. They'd lost a lot of their key members and were sort of more of a makeshift team that went on an impressive run.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, obviously, because I was 12 years old when that championship happened, and for whatever reason, that's the one I remember the most of my childhood. I actually was very fortunate to have been part of a family that had season tickets for all of the years of the WHA, and they won three championships, and they did have Hedberg and Nilsson and Hull, which was fantastic, but I was just a little older in 79, and I remember that team really well. And one of the things about it that was so great was that that team was not expected to win. It didn't win early on. It really was not playing well at all until they turned things around with the addition of Tom McBee and the goalie Gary the Axe or the Suitcase Smith coming in. And all of a sudden, they managed to change everything around, and they won. And they had some really great players, Terry Ruskowski, Kent Nilsson, Rich Preston, guys like that, who, unfortunately, the Jets weren't able to retain as they moved into the NHL. And they probably would have been a pretty decent team if they had been able to keep some of those guys. But as we know, they were not able to keep any of them, and they ended up being one of the worst teams in the league for two consecutive seasons before finally getting some things going. And, you know, I just remember that team being, you know, one of those ones where they were a bit of an underdog. They beat Gretzky and the Oilers in the final. Mm-hmm. And it was really, you know, it was exciting. I watched the last game quite a few times lately because I wanted to have some information for tonight. And, you know, it wasn't always the greatest hockey. The goaltending was not good. Certainly not on the Oilers' standpoint. But the goalies were so small, it's just unbelievable in terms of their padding and everything. But it was very exciting. The Winnipeg Arena was as loud then, with only 10,000 people in it, as the MTS, Bell MTS place is now, with 15,000. It was always a sign that Winnipeg fans absolutely loved the Jets and they loved a winner. And that was a pretty special time.
Ted, final question for you. A couple of days ago, you wrote about Willie Lindstrom, and you know, you talked about the hotline, you know, Bobby Hull, Hedberg, and Nielsen. You know, Willie Lindstrom was obviously, you know, not on that top line, but, you know, you wrote about how big of an impact he had. He won, I think it was three Avco Cups with the Jets. Also, you had a little a tidbit in there. He was eventually traded for Laurie Boschman back in 1983. But do you think that Lindstrom is a guy that should get a little bit more notoriety for the role that he played on those Avco Cup winning teams?
Well, he was never the top guy, that's for sure. You're right about that. He did play a little bit with Hull and Nilsson when Hedberg was hurt, because he was also a left-shooting right winger, just like Anders Hedberg. And he was a very talented hockey player, and he's a really great guy. I've had a good chance to get to know him a little more this week. And a guy who absolutely loves Winnipeg. I mean, he considers this a home. He's from Sweden. He lives in Sweden, but he considers Winnipeg to be one of his homes. And his daughter was born here, and he loves being back here. It's the second time third time since 2016 that he's been back now. So you know he likes it. And yeah, I think he was a really, really great second line player. To be totally honest, that's the way I would put it. He was playing behind Hedberg, Nilsson, and Hull here. He told me when he went to Edmonton, he started out with Gretzky, but then he got moved to the second line. And, of course, there he was with Messier and Anderson, so that wasn't so bad either. And really, his claim to fame, he has two great claim to fame, in my opinion. One is that he won 3 Avco Cups in his 4 seasons in Winnipeg, and then he won 2 Stanley Cups with the Oilers. And so in 10 years of North American pro hockey, he won 5 championships. He sure got used to that. And he also played on lines over the course of his career with Bobby Hull, Wayne Gretzky, Mark Messier, and Mario Lemieux.
Not too shabby.
I don't think there's anyone else that can say that.
Yeah.
And he doesn't think so either. And, of course, he takes a lot of pride in that.
For more on the WHA 1978-79 Jets team, they're having a reunion dinner tonight. Tickets are available at eventbrite.ca. Ted Wyman is going to be the MC of that fine dinner. Teddy, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us to talk about the Jets and the old Jets 1.0.
Always a pleasure, guys. Have a great day.
Likewise, Ted. Take care. When we come back, we touch on the Stanley Cup Final. Game 3 goes tonight between the Blues and the Bruins in St. Louis. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live Saturday morning on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Let it on back. Barbashev across. Drive. And that one whistled wide. Came back along to Gunnarsson once more. They've got Sundqvist set up at the opposite circle. Across to Gunnarsson. He scores! The Blues win it in overtime and have evened the series.
Is there anybody better than Doc Emmerich?
Well, I was going to say, often imitated, never duplicated. Doc Emmerich with the overtime winner call. Carl Gunnarsson. Nobody had him in the ICOT pool, believe it or not. Carl Gunnarsson with the blast from the point. He beats Tuukka Rask, and the series is tied 1 game apiece between the Blues and the Bruins. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live Saturday morning here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
The funniest part about Gunnarsson scoring that goal is that he hit the post earlier in the game.
Well, he dented the post with about 45 seconds to go, a minute and a half to go in the third period.
And you heard the story from Craig Berube
about them
standing at the urinal and he goes, I just need one more shot.
Yeah, that's the funniest part.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the first thing that, you know, we were talking about it off air about sort of how much more compelling the NBA final is to the NHL. That's the first time NHL players have actually shown personality and shown something beyond the most rote cliches possible in a long time.
And I was going to say, actually, the nice part about it was the fact that the Blues actually showed like a 2-minute run up for scoring and then being in the dressing room. And I mean, obviously it's edited.
Yeah.
So you're not seeing everything raw, but the reality
is not seeing them at the urinal together.
No, but the point is you get the coach speaking to his group and it's a lot of fun. You can see the reaction from the boys. So I think from that perspective, it gives fans a little bit of an insight into what happens in a room after a game more than what they would normally see.
You know, guys, we were last segment talking to Teddy Wyman about the 1979, you know, Jets team that won the Avco Cup. Do you ever think like Tom McVie was, you know, beside like Willie Lindstrom at the trough?
They didn't have urinals back then. You're right. It was probably just the trough in the old barn at the Winnipeg Arena. Anyways, game 3 goes tonight between the Bruins and the Blues. And it's, you know, first game 1 was controlled by the Bruins. There was, you know, the rust lasted about 20 minutes and then the Bruins took over for periods 2 and 3. But certainly in game 2, St. Louis was the better of the two teams. They controlled all of overtime and it sort of felt like it was only a matter of time before the Blues were going to be able to pump one past Tuukka Rask. Bruins were better in game one. They won game one. Blues were better in game two. They won game two. So far, it's been the more deserving team winning the games in the series.
Yeah, Brad Marchand, you know, Patrice Bergeron, David Pastrnak. I mean, they just weren't a factor in game two. And you mentioned the overtime. That's what stands out to me. I mean, the Blues deserve to win this game, guys. Obviously, it could have gone the either way. You know, Jordan Binnington was really solid in net, but the Blues outplayed the Bruins for the majority of that game. And you talk about, you know, Vladimir Tarasenko had the big goal in game one, but, you know, I thought Ryan O'Reilly was better in game two. And when you're talking about this series, and I agree, going back to kind of, you know, comparing the NBA final versus the Stanley Cup final, you can't compete with that right now in Canada. I mean, the Raptors have taken over and they deserve to take over because, you know, first time ever in the NBA final and all of that. But when you're talking about, you know, this series, I think with what happened in game two with Oscar Sundquist now suspended for hitting Matt Grizzlick, and now Grizzlick is out of the lineup, and you're going to see John Moore is going to come in, former Devils defenseman.
I knew you were going to say former Devils defenseman. I was just waiting for you to say it.
Well, and you know, Moore's a former first-round pick. He's played, I think, five games now in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Bruins signed him to a lengthy contract, if I recall correctly. Sort of not a big dollar figure.
Four years, five years.
Yeah, 4 years, five years. Like $2 million, a little more than $2 million a season.
He's a journeyman defenseman, right?
He's your
kind of prototypical third pairing guy, but you know that when he goes in there, he's going to be pretty solid, right? He's going to play with Connor Clifton there on the third pair. But when you're talking about, you know, the Blues now, so they're not going to have Sundquist.
It was a 5 year contract that they signed him to. Yeah.
Yeah, no,
you don't usually see 5 year contracts
to the 27, 28 year old journeyman guys.
Well, worth less than $3 million a season.
Sure.
It was a 5 year, $13.75 million contract.
Right. No, fair enough. Yeah. And, you know, what I was going to say is, you look at some of the guys the Blues have out of the lineup. Robbie Fabry goes in for Robert Thomas, right? And now you're going to have Zach Sanford go in for Oscar Sundquist. And, you know, Sanford is a guy that, you know, he's played some games in the playoffs. I think he's only played two or three games, but, you know, he's a fourth line guy, but, you know, good player. I think he scored, eight or nine goals during the regular season for the Blues. So, I mean, the Blues have the depth. I don't think that, you know, these guys, and Vince Dunn is the other guy that I didn't mention, but when you're talking about, you know, Dunn, Thomas, and Sundquist, Drew, these are three guys that have played a big role. You go back to that, you know, first round series against the Jets. You know, you talk about
Sundquist was really effective against the Jets.
Sundquist was good. He went from the second line to the fourth line. But the point is, guys, I mean, the Blues were the more desperate team. They got the series tied up, and with the series going back to St. Louis now, the first time, you know, in 49 years that they've had a home playoff date, you know that place is going to be rocking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Tuukka Rask, even though I don't think that you can blame him necessarily for any of the goals, you know, he didn't have his best game, but for me, it's got to be that perfection line. I mean, that line has to be better. I just didn't think they were really impactful at all.
They didn't live up to their name in game two, certainly, and the Bruins need more from them if they want to, you know, certainly at least get a split in St. Louis and make it a best-of-three series.
Well, and it's great to be getting goals from Sean Corrali and Joachim Nordstrom and these types of guys. I mean, fourth-line guys this time of year, you know, the Blues have gotten big goals from third-line guys like Pat Maroon and Tyler Bozak, but, I mean, if the Bruins are going to win this series. I mean, that line, and that goes back to game one. I didn't think they were terrible in game one, but they're going to have to put their
2-0 after the first period.
And you know, the Bruins have to, those guys specifically have to put their stamp on this series, I think. And they got to do it on the road in game three. The other thing we should mention, guys, is the Blues still haven't been that great at home, right? So, I mean, the Bruins, you know, they've been good on home ice and on the road, but the Blues, I mean, this has kind of been their, you know, Achilles heel a little bit. If you talk about, you know, their home record hasn't been good. So, I mean, it's a wide open series right now. A lot of people, I think, are maybe giving the Blues a little bit of an edge. I don't see it. I think this is going to be a 6 or 7 gamer.
And that's the best part. Isn't it great how, remember, the Blues were going to get destroyed by San Jose when San Jose wins the first game, and then everybody's like, well, the Blues don't have a chance, and then the Blues do what they do. So I love that. You know, and coming into this one, everybody was like, well, this is Boston. Boston's going to dominate, and it'll be over relatively quickly.
I thought the Bruins were going to win in 5.
You did. I remember that. Yeah. But the point is that, you know, and that's fine because it could have happened. But
still can.
It still could. But the point is that the likelihood is that this is going to be a longer series.
All these teams are so close to each other. You almost flip a coin, and there's no one team that's dominant, you know, like you saw in you know, previous years in the NBA where the Warriors, you know, would dominate because it was against, you know, just one guy against against LeBron, and the Cavaliers couldn't match up. And, you know, now you see the Warriors against the Raptors, for example, and no Durant in on the Warriors lineup, and Andre Iguodala battling injury. All of a sudden, the Raptors look like a pretty decent competition against the Warriors. Quickly, though, any problems? I mean, I heard people saying they thought Torrey Krug's hit on Robert Thomas was charging and it should have been a penalty. I thought that was a good, clean, hard hit.
No, if you actually look, it wasn't a charge just because he came, you know, 180 feet or whatever. He actually glides. Like, I've watched the hit many times now, guys. Yeah. I mean, it's a clean hit.
I thought
and
it was
maybe
clean.
Because his helmet was off, you know, it looks worse than it really was. And Thomas is injured and all that. But, I mean, that was a textbook clean body check.
Yeah.
Oscar Sundquist, and, you know, I love Grapes, but what Grapes was saying about Matt Grizzlick putting himself in a vulnerable position.
That was nonsense.
I mean, Sundquist drives his head into the glass, and he has an opportunity because there's about a 1 second after he gets rid of the puck. Grizzlick gets rid of the puck. And it's unfortunate for the Bruins guys because Grizzlick has had a nice playoffs. I think he's got 3 goals and 7 points, something like that. So, you know, Grizzlick has been really solid on that third pair with Clifton. So, I had no problem. I mean, it goes back to what you've said before, Drew. I think if they gave Sundquist a 5-minute major,
yeah,
he doesn't get suspended.
But because they didn't give him, they only gave him the 2-minute minor, he gets suspended for the one game.
Yep.
When we come back, we head out to Missouri. Michael Trakos is on site. The game day skates are about to happen. We talk more about the Stanley Cup final with Michael Trakos of Post Media. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk in studios, producer Sean Asor doing a great job behind the board. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. You can also do so via text message if you so choose. Standard messaging rates do apply. Send your text to 129090. And for all the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, visit IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
He's the national hockey writer for Post Media. He joins us from St. Louis, where Game 3 between the Bruins and the Blues will go later on tonight. He's our good friend, Michael Trakos. Michael, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. How's it going there?
Good. Doing very well. Michael, how about yourself?
Doing all right. I think we got ourselves a series, which is nice.
Yeah, it's certainly... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I thought Boston, the way they're playing, especially in that Eastern Conference final, covered both the first round and the third round. I thought they were just a juggernaut that was just going to, you know, I didn't think I thought they might just roll the Blues in four straight, the way that Tuukka Rask had been playing and the way that the power play had been clicking. But it was nice to see some pushback from the Blues. And, you know, I don't know how to handicap the rest of the series. I think a lot of it's going to be sort of a battle of attrition, and you see the bodies that are out of the lineup for tonight. It really is going to be who has the better depth, I think.
Yeah, you know, to your point there about sort of last man standing at this point in time, given all the people who are out of the lineup, either due to injury or, in the case of Oscar Sundquist, suspension for bad hits on Bruins defenseman Matt Grizzlechick, whose name I just terribly butchered, but that's okay. But
a lot better than I do.
Okay, there you go. Well, that's why I stick to audio, you stick to writing. We got a good balance there, Michael. You know, I guess to your point there, you know, the Bruins, you know, they start off slow in game one, which isn't really a surprise given the layoff that they had, and then they dominate for the final two periods, and then you look at this Blues team and they really were the better of the two teams in game two. Did the Bruins maybe take their foot off the gas in game two, thinking that they could coast after how they dominated at the end of game one, or you know, how do you explain sort of the Blues pushback in game two?
Yeah, it's a good question. I honestly think that the Blues just eventually wore them down, and you know, that's a forecheck that comes at you in waves. And when you lose a defenseman early in the game, and you're down to five, I really think that it just became a matter of time before the Blues just kind of had the Bruins just completely gassed and defeated in their back end. And I don't think it happened on one play. I think it was almost like death by a thousand paper cuts in a lot of ways. But you know, it's a good team over there in St. Louis. I think a lot of us, well, at least myself included, like you guys probably see them a lot more than I do. You almost forget how much depth they do have. Like they've got a third line there with Bozak, Pat Maroon, and it was Robert Thomas. Now it's Robbie Fabry, and that's a pretty good third line. It's not a line that might jump out at you points wise, but you know, each guy's got a specific role. They keep the puck in the other end pretty well.
And, you know, like every line, lines one through four can cycle the puck, and it can get really taxing, especially on a team that, you know, like I said, in game two, they were without a defenseman, and it just looked like, you know, by overtime, they had nothing left.
Mike, I wanted to ask you about Patrice Bergeron because, you know, he was so good, you know, in the first two rounds. He was good in the last round too, but specifically the first couple of rounds. You go back to the Toronto series and how dominant he was in the faceoff circle and, you know, shutting the Leafs down. And, you know, he hasn't really had a big impact in the first two games. Is he one guy that you're going to be watching tonight and trying to see if he's able to put a stamp on the series? And I realize that, you know, Bergeron might be dealing with some injury problems right now, but is he a guy that you're looking to step up? Because he just seems to always step up in these types of situations.
Yeah, I wrote today, or I guess it was yesterday's paper. Every time, like, the problem with criticizing Bergeron and that line in general is that it's a take that doesn't age well. One second you're saying that this line hasn't done anything, and the next time you look there, they've got like six goals combined, and that's how dangerous Bergeron, Marchand, and David Pastrnak that can be. And yeah, I think they combined for 260 points in the regular season, and in the playoffs, they haven't been consistent in the sense that they've done it game after game after game. But when you look at it, I think Bergeron's got eight goals. Marchand has eight goals. Pastrnak has seven goals. So they're getting their points somehow. And a lot of it is power play. And I think that's where the Blues really have to be careful, is that you don't give Boston's top line any sort of momentum, and you don't put yourself in danger by getting yourself in the penalty box. Because, you know, as a power play, there's none better than the Bruins power play in the playoffs. I think they're clicking at the, well, last time I checked, it was something around like 32-33% success rate, which is just, it's deadly. And that's what really spelled the Carolina Hurricanes, in the sense that they just couldn't, you know, get any traction, because the Bruins, every time they went on the power play, they just kept getting goals. So that's where they're going to get their points, I think. If the Blues are undisciplined, Boston's going to have a field day. But yeah, I'm with you. I think in the sense that we should get a little bit of a bounce back, especially from that top line.
Oh, Michael, with the Raptors fever gripping the nation, are you getting the sense that outside the market of Boston and St. Louis, the Stanley Cup is really inspiring interest?
Interest in basketball? Like, let's face it, like, I don't know how you guys are in Manitoba, if you're on the bandwagon there with the Raptors, but everyone I talked to back home couldn't care less about the Stanley Cup final, which is sort of disappointing, because I think it is a heck of a final. It's nasty. It's physical. It's everything you want in the Stanley Cup. But with the Raptors being there the first time, you know, even sports writers, I had a couple of Finns yesterday were walking around in Raptors caps, and everyone seems to be talking about the anticipation for game two of the final, NBA final, that is. So it's a difficult sell, and I get it. It's the first time for Toronto's and really Canada's basketball team.
Michael Trakos is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Michael is the national hockey writer for Post Media.
Okay, so let's spend the rest of this segment talking about Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet.
Yeah, maybe next segment we'll do that. But Michael, to your point, did you see the tweets from Taylor Hall yesterday talking about the...
No, I didn't see it.
Okay, so Taylor Hall comes out and says that, you know, basically, you know, he's never really paid much attention to the NBA, but this Raptors run has really opened his eyes to how great a league it is. There is a real sense of bravado and showmanship that you don't see in other sports. The stars are on display every night, and it's impressive. That, you know, he tweeted that, and then he sort of followed it up by, you know, he didn't intend to, you know, throw any shade at the NHL. But is the NHL maybe learning a lesson, finally, after who knows how many years, how many decades at this point in time, that they need to do a better job of marketing their best players and making them more visible and really capturing the attention with some of the personalities that are on display?
So we need Drake massaging Bruce Cassidy's shoulders. is that where we're going there?
What would be the NHL equivalent?
I'm not sure what the NHL equivalent to that would be, but I mean,
I don't think there is one, boy.
And Drake could be wearing a Thomas Steen jersey, maybe, right? Like, you get the
throwing shade at that. Because
he's wearing Del Curry's jersey. Yeah. So
it's tough, because let's face it, with basketball, you're seeing Kawhi Leonard on the court for almost the whole game, and you're actually seeing him. Like, there's no helmet, there's no visor, There's no bulky equipment kind of hiding things. So you do get a real sense of their athleticism and really for their style and flair. You see haircuts, you see facial hair. Whereas, you know, like especially with the beards now in hockey, everyone sort of looks like porcupines out there skating around. And you know, it's a tough sell when you're trying to sell it on the personalities. Like, I would argue that Brad Marchand is probably the biggest personality, and yet when you mention Brad Marchand, people aren't saying that it's a good thing that he's got personality. They can't stand it. So it really is, I think it's totally different sports. I get where Taylor Hall is coming from. I do love the whole bravado and the flair of basketball and the fact that they do sell their stars, but I just don't know how you can do it in the NHL without really kind of forcing the issue.
Mike, I know you're in St. Louis and you're covering Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final, but you know you're of course in Toronto. So we got to ask you about the news around the Leafs and Nikita Zaitsev. I understand that he's potentially going to be traded, and the one that surprised me though, Patrick Marleau, and I realize there's a connection there with Todd McClellan with their time in San Jose, but were you kind of scratching your head when you saw that the Leafs and the Kings were discussing a Marleau trade? I guess it makes sense from a perspective of maybe clearing up some cap space because you have to sign, guys like Mitch Marner. But to me, that doesn't seem like a good fit for the Kings.
That doesn't seem like a good fit for Marleau either. Like, if this guy is at the end of his career, which he is, and he's looking for a championship, I don't know why you'd waive it to go to Los Angeles, aside from the simple fact that, that's somewhere where he's familiar with, at least California. Like, granted, he was playing in Northern California, not down in Los Angeles, but it doesn't make a lot of sense why you'd leave a team that, let's face it, they're close. They lost in the first round this year, but just like Winnipeg, just like Calgary, you would say that their best days are still ahead of them. So I'm kind of scratching my head in that regard. But as for Toronto, yeah, they need cap relief, let's face it. Whether it's Zaitsev going somewhere, Marleau going somewhere, potentially Nazem Kadri going somewhere, or Connor Brown, Kapanen, Johnsson, one of these guys is going to go, possibly two or three of them are going to go in the summer. And it's just a matter of what Kyle Dubas can do in the sense of, can he convince guys to accept the trade? Can he package a prospect or a pick or a young player with a problem contract? It's going to be tricky, and they have to do something because Mitch Marner is going to get in the neighborhood of $11 million this year. Austin Matthews' contract kicks in this coming year, and that's not even taking into account that Kapanen and Young, if they're sticking around, are also going to get big time raises as well. So it's tricky. They got to do something though.
Last question for you, Michael. You mentioned the depth. You think it'll be the deciding factor over the next potentially five games as Game 3 goes tonight between the Bruins and the Blues. Do you see one team having better depth than the other right now? I mean, the injuries are lining up. You got guys who, missing game day skates, key members of each team missing game day skates. How do you prognosticate the next sort of maximum of five games?
Well, I think Boston's got the best fourth line in hockey. And that's going to carry them. It has carried them. You look at Sean Corelli, Noah Chari, and now it's Joachim Nordstrom. Mm-hmm. Those guys aren't just physical; they're really kind of protecting the puck. And but they're scoring goals. They're also matching up against the top line. So I would put the favor in Boston's corner right now in terms of depth. That being said, I really think it's going to come down to who's got the better top line and which one's clicking. And right now, St. Louis is winning that battle, and we'll see if Boston can kind of answer back tonight.
Michael Tracos is in St. Louis for Game 3 between the Blues and the Bruins. He'll cover the entire series for Post Media. Michael, always appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy Game 3 tonight.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Michael. When we come back, what are we talking about? When we come back, we're going to talk about the new head coaches in Ottawa.
Not Andrei Chipasov,
unless you found out any more information about him there, Dave.
I have not.
Okay, there you go. When we come back, we'll talk about the new head coaches in Ottawa, the new head coaches in Edmonton, and why the Anaheim Ducks are still without a coach. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I'm here today to introduce the next head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, Dave Tippett. Dave's teams play with structure. He holds his players accountable. And he's a good communicator.
I've been in pro hockey a long time as a player and as a coach.
I haven't had the good fortune of coaching in Canada or playing in Canada, and that was very intriguing to me.
That's Edmonton Oilers general manager Ken Holland and new head coach Dave Tippett. He's the next man to steer the good ship Lollipop as they try and get back on the rightward path in Edmonton. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Couple of coaches being hired in the NHL. One team still without a coach. We start in Edmonton, as you just heard from Ken Holland and Dave Tippett. Is this the right hire? Is Dave Tippett the right guy to lead the Oilers? To me, I'm not sure why Dave Tippett will be successful when Ken Hitchcock wasn't successful last season.
Well, I mean, Hitchcock comes into a really difficult situation, right? I mean, the Oilers were already behind the eight ball, right, when he took over for Todd McClellan. But, you know, to answer your question, Drew, I mean, I don't know. I mean, when you talk about, you know, will Dave Tippett be the right hire? I mean, I think it has a lot to do with the moves that Ken Holland makes, right, guys? Because when you're talking about where Peter Chiarelli left this team, and it still absolutely boggles my mind that Mikko Koskinen was signed to that contract the day or two before he was released. Like, I still don't know why they gave Koskinen $4.5 million a year.
It's the best contract. It's my favorite contract in a long time.
But he's not, you could argue that he's not even a backup goalie at, well, I shouldn't say that. I mean, he's a guy that can play probably a backup role, but if you're going into the season with Mikko Koskinen as your number one goalie, you have a problem.
Well, the question is, you know, do they buy out that contract this summer? Do they buy it out next summer?
Yeah, exactly. Is it like a buyout package with Milan Lucic? Because when you're talking about the Oilers, I mean, they have all types of moves. And I think, Dave, what it comes down to is where Peter Chiarelli left this team.
In disarray.
He just left the team with no depth at forward and no depth on defense. No depth in goal. I mean, really.
Other than that, though, he left them in great shape.
But honestly, though, guys, everyone always says you've got basically Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Ryan Nugent Hopkins, and, you know, a bunch of nobodies, right?
Well, Darnell Nurse, you can throw in there as quality.
And again, I don't say that, but they're definitely top heavy. And I agree, Darnell Nurse, for me, is their best defenseman, along with Oscar Klefbom. But I've said this so many times on this show, guys, and I can't imagine what they say on TSN 1260. Dave Jamieson must lose his mind when he talks about this team, because this team still needs a number one defenseman. And Evan Bouchard could be that guy one day, but he's only 19 years old. So for me, you need to bring in a top pairing defenseman, because I think right now you've got a bunch of second pairing defensemen. You know, no offense to Adam Larson, I just don't think he's that good. I think on a good team, he's probably a third pairing guy. And when you talk about the forward depth, I mean, Ken Holland is going to have to make some significant moves. I don't know if you trade a prospect. Like, if I'm him, I'm probably going to keep Jesse Puljujärvi. Like, I really don't think Puljujärvi is a guy that you necessarily have to move this early in his career. But the point is, you're going to have to make some tough decisions, and that might include buying out Milan Lucic.
I think, to your point, Ezzy, I think if you look at what the Bakersfield Condors have, and they were able to take the San Diego Gulls to the in the semifinals of the Western Conference, they have some good prospects in the minors. And those are guys that you're maybe starting to rely upon this year, but you're hoping probably in the next 2 or 3 years are going to be the guys who are going to start to fill out the roster more fulsomely. So to me, again, you start to have to make some moves. And I feel like this exact same conversation we had last summer about the Oilers.
And the summer before, and the summer before, and the summer before, and the summer before.
True, but I just remember, like, there was maybe that, you know, like, there was that thought, like, okay, the Oilers are going to do something, and we were talking about their defense and the weakness of the defense. And again, their goaltending proved to be a weakness. So it's very hard. You know, they say the expression, Rome wasn't built in a day. Well, it's very hard to rebuild an NHL team.
How many days was it built in?
I don't know.
It's a good question. Maybe you can research that and let us know.
I suggest we send Ezzy to Italy to do some research.
You can send me.
I've been to Rome.
I've been to Rome too, and I don't know how many days it's been either, but it's a nice place. I enjoyed it.
Actually, I did. So did I.
Yeah. Anyways,
we digress.
Yeah, we certainly
do. I've never been to Europe. I like to stick to North America.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that you have actually been banned from traveling.
One continent works for me.
Yeah, you know, the EU got together, you know. Pretty sure Brexit was actually called Brexit, and don't let Ezzy into Europe at any point in time.
And so I just think that from an Oilers perspective, it's very tough because, and we talked about this, you know, you're changing the coach that could improve the structure. You've got some very nice pieces, obviously, in Edmonton. But overall, the sum of all the parts, is that sufficient to really make a major change? And I think from their perspective, again, I think you're looking maybe 2 or 3 years down the line to really be that team that challenges. I could be wrong, but I think it's more of a potentially shorter term, but longer term than what we want in society, which is tomorrow or yesterday.
Well, and see, Dave, you say it might be 2 or 3 years until the Oilers challenge, and that might be the case. But I look at this Oilers team, right, and they've missed the playoffs, what, 11 of the last 12 years, I think it is,
yeah.
Right? So when you're talking about, you know, this team, when you've got Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl in their prime, right? Draisaitl had the 50-goal season, and we know that, you know, McDavid, he might win the Hart Trophy as the MVP. But when you're talking about this team, I don't think they can wait that long, guys. Like, I'm not saying, Dave, that, you know, the Oilers need to win the Cup next year, but I think at the very least, you got to make the playoffs.
You have to be competitive. I mean,
no, you have to make the playoffs. I don't care what anybody says. The Oilers, I mean, you look at some of these other teams that have turned their fortunes around. You think of Colorado. Yeah. You think of Carolina. I mean, like, just being a little bit better is not going to cut it. Like, you're wasting prime years here with McDavid and Draisaitl. And we know once you get into the playoffs, who knows, maybe you win a round or two, Drew. But what I'm saying is you can't be making trades thinking, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road. I'm not saying that that's what Dave's saying, but I'm saying you have to make trades that get you into the playoffs this year. That's the way I look at it.
Mortgaging of the future trades, though?
Well, look, you know, like Dave talked about Bakersfield, right? You've got guys like Ethan Bear. We talked about Evan Bouchard.
Mm-hmm. Kyler Yamamoto.
Yeah, Kyler. I mean, Caleb Jones, yeah. Seth Jones' brother. He's another good young defenseman. But when you're talking about, like, I feel like your strength right now, if you have one, I mean, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, that's your strength. But when you're talking about prospects, I mean, maybe you do move a prospect. You have to get into the playoffs this year. I really do believe that. I mean, you guys might think differently, but
that's fair.
I just think this team has been rebuilding for 10 years. Yeah. Like, you can't keep rebuilding and rebuilding. I mean, at a certain point, Ken Holland's going to have to get aggressive here and bring someone in. And I'm not saying that's Erik Karlsson. I'm not saying that it's, you know, Matt Duchene, one of the top guys. Or I don't think Panarin's going there. It looks like he's going to go somewhere hot.
I mean, none of those guys are going.
But I'm saying you need to bring in, I think, a vet. You need to sign somebody that makes you better, makes you deeper, right? Like, you have to complement McDavid and Draisaitl with bona fide NHLers. They hoped that it was going to be Lucic, but at this point in his career, Lucic is a third or fourth liner. You can't be paying a third or fourth liner $5 million a year.
Quickly to Ottawa, where the Ottawa Senators hired DJ Smith, a former Toronto Maple Leafs assistant coach, to become their head coach. Smith is 42 years old. He spent the last 4 years with Mike Babcock on his staff with the Leafs. I mean, that's a team, the Senators, obviously, that have no expectations of making the playoffs this coming season. It seems like, I mean, DJ Smith, I think, will be considered a success as long as the team shows some signs of improvement over last year.
Right, and it was a bit of a surprise hiring because you thought that, you know, maybe they were going to go with, you know, the veteran coach, right? Like, Jacques Martin was a guy whose name was thrown out there, but, you know, DJ Smith, a really well-respected assistant coach at the NHL level. But you're right, I mean, This is a hiring that you're hoping, you know, leads them through this next stage, right, guys? Because when you're talking about the Senators, I mean, if they make the playoffs next year, it's going to be a huge surprise. But it's a good young team, and, you know, there's a lot of opportunity for a lot of players, and there's going to be more turnover. But you know, when you're talking about DJ Smith, I mean, when you have a team like this, I think it's the right hire, because when you look at, you know, the Senators and what they've done, you know, with Guy Boucher, Mark Crawford. Why not go with kind of the new age NHL coach? Like, I can hear that argument. Like, why would you keep going back to the well of of those old coaches? Like, why not bring in a new voice?
Get somebody who knows how to work with young talent.
Right.
Because that's what you have. You have a team with young talent, a team that's going to, you know, like the Jays almost with Charlie Montoya as their bench boss. Montoya is known for being a very, you know, player-focused head coach or manager, as the case may be in baseball. And he's going to have young guys, and there's going to be a lot of losing. So get a guy who's, you know, optimistic and positive, because it's going to be a long season. season likely in Ottawa, much like it is in Toronto with the Blue Jays, Dave.
Yeah, and DJ Smith has NHL experience, played 45 games in the NHL, played a lot of games in the AHL. So, I mean, he's a guy who knows, you know, what it takes to compete on a night-in, night-out basis. So, I like the idea that they went away from
the retreads.
The names that everybody's been throwing out.
Rick Bonus was another guy.
Patrick Roy.
Patrick Roy would have been great.
Yeah, well, that would have been... Him and Eugene Melnyk would have been quite the combo, but the reality is at least give someone some new blood an opportunity.
When we come back, Cam Robinson is going to join us. We'll talk a little bit about some of the draft-eligible prospects that are going to be selected at the NHL Draft in Vancouver, which is in 3 weeks' time. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.